So let's start the recording and start the webinar.
Thank you very much, Olivier. I'll just start the recording if you just bear with me for a couple of seconds. The recordings have started. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome on today's at-large briefing on the CPWT on accountability on Wednesday the 29th of April at 1300 UTC. We will not be doing a roll call as this is a webinar, but if I could please remind you that we have Spanish and French interpretation, and if you could please state your names when king for transcript purposes, but also to allow the interpreters to identify you on the other language channel. If you could also speak at a reasonable pace to allow for accurate interpretation. And if you are on the phone bridge and on the Adobe Connect, please do mute your microphones. Thank you, and over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Gisela. Olivier Capanablon speaking, and I'm just here as the host of this call today. We have a number of or should I call them panelists or participants who are going to take us through various aspects of the work of the Cross-Committee Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability. As you know, this process runs in parallel with the Cross-Committee Working Group on INS Stewardship Transition, and a large segment or significant segment of the work of the Cross-Committee Working Group on INS Stewardship Transition is relying on the work of the Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability. Might this all sound very complicated and complex? Well, hopefully this webinar here is going to help you look and have a good summary of what has gone on and where we are going. We have Leon Sanchez, who is one of the co-chairs of the Cross-Committee Working Group. We have Alan Greenberg, who is the chair of the ALAC, and he is also a member of the Cross-Community Working Group. Cheryl Langdonor is also a member of the Working Group, and Avri Doria is a participant in the Cross-Community Working Group and also an ATRT expert, and so is participating not only in this, but I think that most of the participants here are also participating in the work on the INS stewardship transition, and hopefully they can give you a good overview of what of where we are, as I said, and where we are going and what the issues are right now. So let's start with our first panelist, and that's Leon Sanchez, I believe, who is going to be speaking to us about the overall Enhancing ICANN Accountability. Leon, you have the floor, and I believe you probably have control of the slides as well.
Thank you very much, Olivier. This is Leon Sanchez, and I'll try to give all our attendants a very brief overview of what the CCWG on Enhancing ICANN Accountability has done so far, a little bit about how it's built, I mean, its composition, and, of course, a quick update on where we are at and our next steps. So this group was formed, of course, after the statement made by the NTIA, in which they announced that they would be handing the stewardship over the IANA functions management to the internet community. I believe I'm told that my audio is not the best, so I would like you to please confirm whether you can hear me all right, or should I need to get called back.
I hear you well, Jan speaking.
Okay, so...
Leon Giesler speaking now. Just to confirm that the interpreters have said that it is better now, I will let you know if it gets any worse, in which case we'll dial out to you. Thank you, and apologies for the inconvenience.
Thank you very much, Gisela. I believe it's on my side, the problem. I always I always get this problem with this line, so no apologies needed on the contrary. Well, so as I was saying, this this group was convened after the NTIA announcement on its will to hand stewardship of the IANA management functions to the internet community. And we first had the CWG, and then, of course, someone got a word that enhancing accountability would also be something useful for this process. So, of course, the scope of this work group, this cross-community working group, is to ensure that ICANN enhances its existing accountability. We do have many accountability measures in place, many accountability processes in place, but there's the feeling in the community that many of these mechanisms or these different processes do need improvement and do need to be enhanced. So this is part of the scope of this working group. And of course, also investigate the accountability mechanisms regarding all the functions provided by ICANN, which of course comprises the IANA functions managing at this point, and of course deliver proposals that would enhance ICANN's accountability towards all stakeholders. We need to remember that one of the conditions that the NTIA has set to approve any proposal that comes or that is supposed to carry on with the transition has a requirement of being a multi-stakeholder and of course foster or favor the multi-stakeholder model. So of course accountability is not only towards the ICANN community, but to some extent to a wider community, which of course includes all kinds of stakeholders. So to organize our work, we began by dividing our objectives into two work streams. Work stream one is the one that we are working very hard on right now, and it refers to those measures or those mechanisms that must be in place or committed to within the time frame of the IANA stewardship transition. This means that these are the mechanisms and measures that need to be in place before the transition actually takes place. So that is work stream one. And work stream two is focused on addressing the accountability topics for which we have a more flexible timeline. And this, of course, extends after the IANA stewardship transition has taken place. And it's not that it takes care of less important issues, but rather issues that need not be in place before the transition and can, of course, be addressed after we guarantee that those items in Workstream 1 have, in fact, been committed or put in place so far. So this is the division of the work, the initial division of the work into these two work streams. And just to give you a little sense of how the group is composed, who are the different members and participants, we have documented some 161 people so far. And we have 25 members and 136 participants and 38 mailing list of servers. The difference between members and participants is really something that's not very difficult to understand. Members, should there be a need to have a consensus call on any issue, the ones that would be able to vote on that consensus would be the members, and participants would not have a vote in that process. But other than that, the interaction between members, participants, and observers is exactly the same. everyone is able to participate, raise points, questions, to contribute with any comments, etc. So we are on a very equal footing, let's say, between members and participants. And as I said, the only difference is that should there be the need to have a call for consensus on any topic, then the members would be the ones that, of course, would be voting on that consensus call. And within these 25 members, the at-large community through the ALEC has five representatives, one for each region. And we also have a co-chair, which is myself, in the group. And there's also two other co-chairs, one from the GNSO, Thomas Rickert, and one from the CCNSO, Matthew Bale. So with this structure, we have so far managed to work through weekly calls, and we've also held a couple of face-to-face meetings. We held one face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt, and then we held another face meeting in Singapore, of course, and our third face-to-face meeting so far has taken place in Istanbul. And our next face-to-face meeting will be happening in Buenos Aires right before the general meeting starts. This will be happening on June 19th. We will be working on a face-to-face session, and of course, I will give you the proper updates if you wish to participate in that face-to-face session as well. So what we have here in our screens at the moment is a little summary, a graphical summary of what the CCWG has done so far. So what we did first, as I was saying previously, is that we had an inventory of the existing accountability mechanisms. There was a public comment process under the general transition scope, in which the community provided feedback on how to enhance ICANN accountability. So what we did is that we recovered all those questions from the community and put them together into a single document. And we, of course, then classified these different accountability mechanisms so we could identify them as workstream 1 or workstream 2 issues. That is where we reviewed the input from the community, as you can see on the second square in phase 1. So after this, we defined some requirements, which were classified into contingencies and risks, and from there we began developing or designing principles that, of course, would enable community empowerment and provide with adequate review and redress mechanisms. So if we follow this logical path through the graphical representation, I think it is pretty clear how we have so far managed to get to the point that we are at the moment, and that is, of course, having our first draft document to be submitted for public comment in a short time. And well, after this, we will, of course, after providing or getting the community's feedback on this first draft, we will incorporate those comments to the solution or to the different proposals that that are put on the table at this moment. This first draft is not a single proposal document. It has, of course, different aspects of the proposal that we are considering, and we want to, of course, get feedback from the community. So, for example, we are, if you go through this document, we are talking about maybe having ICANN's corporate structure modified, so we might have a membership model or a designator model. So this This is something that might not seem really relevant, but it is in the end with regards to the legal implications that any way or any path that we follow will have in the end towards the community and towards how we can enforce the different accountability mechanisms that we are envisioning at this point. So we put in this draft document the two options. We have signaled the preferred option by the CCWG, but this doesn't mean that the decision has been taken already. This only means that through the work that we have been carrying out in the CCWG, we feel that the best mechanism or the best option to carry out with our objectives is either A or B. So we'll let the community know this, and we will, of course, then receive the feedback and review it so we can, of course, have a better proposal after this period of public comment. So after we reviewed and after we carried out this work, we came into some key components. And of course you can see a set of four key components here. The first one being the empowered community, the second one being the board, the third one being the principles incorporated into the bylaws, and the fourth one being an independent appeal mechanism. Think of it as, if we do an analogy, the empowered community would be the legislative power, the board would be the executive power, the principles and bylaws would be the constitution, and the independent appeal mechanism would be the judiciary power. So with this key components, we got into designing different mechanisms, which could be either triggered or non-triggered. And for example, if we are talking about a triggered mechanism, this could be some action that the community might begin after coming to an event into which maybe staff or the board could have acted in some way against the ICANN bylaws or against the policies applicable to any certain situation. So it would trigger, of course, a mechanism that could bring different options to the community to enforce and make sure that I can, and I mean, by I can, I mean board and staff, would act according to I can bylaws. And in with regards to the non-triggered mechanisms, we could be thinking maybe about the ATRT reviews, which are already into our systems, and they don't need to be triggered. They are an ongoing exercise that doesn't need to be started by any given community member or organization, but rather it just it's already scheduled and it happens on an ongoing basis. So after we decided, we came to these four key elements, we began designing some templates for the mechanisms. And if you think of these templates, you can think of them as recipes into a recipe book in which we incorporated different criteria that would need to be taken into account. So any mechanism could, of course, be implemented and achieve a certain goal, being maybe a review mechanism, a redress mechanism, or maybe we're talking about some essential powers that we want to provide the community with, like, for example, maybe having to approve ICANN bylaws, maybe try have the power to impede some changes into the bylaws, having ICANN speak to its mission, maybe having a last resort redress as recalling the whole board, or maybe recalling individual board members. So these are the different options that you can see, and you will be able to review if you go through the first draft document and, of course, the different documents that we have so far produced in the group. And as I said, these are the four different key issues. And this proposal wouldn't, of course, be complete without stress testing what we have so far worked on. So we have had very, very, very useful and important team that has run stress tests on different situations. We had, if I'm not mistaken, 21 different situations in which we identified stress tests that needed to be carried out, and then they got classified into five different, into 26, and thank you, Cheryl, 26 stress tests were identified, and then they were classified into five divisions, and the stress test team has developed these different stress tests, and I am really sure that, of course, Cheryl, when handed the floor, we'll speak more about this, but this is also another requirement from the MTIA, that anything we propose, anything we come up to, should be stress tested and, of course, approved by the community. So if we just jump into a previous slide, in which we have the storyboard of CCWG, you can see that in phase three, we have the envisioned solution. This solution would be stress tested, which is part of what the stress test is actually doing. And if it doesn't pass the stress test, then we would go back to our desks and improve the solution so we can have another stress test run. And if it does pass, then we would have our recommendation submitted to the board, and then the board would in turn hand it to the NTIA. So if you want to, of course, get involved with these activities, this is an open group, and you can follow what we are doing, all our activities, our agenda, meetings, documents, different sub-teams and groups within the CCWG on this URL that is in your screens at the moment. That is the wiki space for the CCWG on enhancing rank and accountability. And our next steps is to finish our first draft proposal to submit it for public comment on May the 4th, as in the Star Wars Day, of course. May the 4th be with you. And we will have a 30-day public comment period in which we will gather, of course, feedback from the community. And after we close that public comment period, we will review all input gathered or received from the community. And one of the things that we will focus in our Buenos Aires meeting will be, of course, incorporating the different feedback and comments that we received through this public comment period, so we can have or build a second draft proposal, maybe not by Buenos Aires, but just some days after Buenos Aires. So if we see the need of going through a second public comment, this would happen, of course, and if the community has provided feedback in a way that a second public comment is not needed, well then, this timeline could, of course, have variations, and of course we would also need to submit any proposal to the chartering organizations so they can have their approval process run through its proper process, internal processes, and then hand it to or submit it to the board so they can in turn, of course, hand it to the NTIA.
So with this, I would like to hand it back to Olivier, and I welcome any questions or comments that anyone may have on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Leon, for this very comprehensive review of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability. It sounds like an enormous amount of work. It actually is an enormous amount of work, and in a very short length of time. We're going to take questions at the end of the presentations from the different participants we have listed here. So I'll hand the floor immediately then to Alan Greenberg next, who's the chair of the AIDAC. Alan, you're a participant in the, you're a member in the process, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Leon, for the overview. I'm going to focus on a number of issues at this point, and those are the issues that are, in my mind, substantive issues that we have not firmly decided on. First of all, I'd like to review very quickly the powers that we're looking at giving the community, because I think this is the substance, or the major substance from from the community's point of view, is what are we getting, and in what way are we able to I won't say control the board, but influence what ICANN is doing. And depending on how we implement it, the level of control may be different. The chart, and thank you, whoever, Gisela, or whoever put that up, that's exactly what I was looking for. And let me just blow up enough so I can actually see what it says. All right. If you look along the top, there is there are five columns. And they're the main categories of things that we're looking at in phase one of this accountability project. The first one is the ability to force the board to either force or encourage the board to review things like budgets and operating plans and strategic plans. These are critical to the direction the organization is going, and if we see the board going in a direction which is counter to what the community believes, we want some ability to control. Now, when I say control, I'll go into in a little bit what kind of control it is. It might be absolute ability to say no, or it might be an ability to force reconsideration or perhaps go to an outside arbitrator to try to come to common ground or decide who is right. the second thing is to require the approval of the community. Excuse me for a second. To require the approval of the community for bylaw changes. Bylaws clearly control what ICANN is doing and how it does it, and they are crucial parts of it. The next column is what is called fundamental bylaws. These are bylaws which we have said are so important and particularly important to the accountability process that they must have approval of the community and widespread approval before they can be changed. The fundamental bylaws are the mechanism by which we make sure the board can't change the bylaws and remove the accountability mechanisms, essentially. The next one is the recalling of directors, either the whole board or individual directors. This is not something that we really envision doing, but it could be done, number one. And number two, the threat of it is hopefully enough to encourage a board, even if we don't have veto control over particular issues, to listen to the community. And I think we're working in that mode right now. If you look at the amount of consultation that's going on budget creation right now, the community has been empowered, but it's community empowered by a board that is willing to give that, by a board and staff that's willing to give that empowerment. And what we're looking to do is put this into the bylaws to make sure that in some future date, this kind of level of interaction is maintained. So those are the essential types of powers. If you scroll down a little bit, until just the bottom of the first page, you will look at, see something called relative voting power. This is the weighting that we're looking at giving the various ACs and SOs to make these decisions. And the current favored proposal is the first one, that is the CCNSO, the GNSO, the ASO at large, and the GAC each have the equivalent of a weight of 5. That would allow us to do things regionally should we decide that was appropriate. It will allow, for instance, the GNSO to do one per stakeholder group plus one for the council overall. So the number 5 is a good number for many of us. And it is talking about the SSAC and the RSAC as with a vote of 2 each. Now, it's a little bit controversial in that you'll see the alternative was to not give the ALAC and GAC as many votes. And I think that's pretty well soundly being rejected by at least some parties, certainly by at large. And the question is it appropriate to have some group with a lower voting rate, lower voting weight, and that is currently being discussed, and in particular discussed with the SSAC and RSAC, none of whom have any members on the group. So we need to be careful that we're not making decisions against some groups just because they're not present to talk about it. One of the questions I've raised is the ASO is also a rather small group. Should they have 5, whereas some of the other, quote, small groups only have 2? And it's an interesting question. The next question, and Leon made reference to it, is the concept of members or designators. Under California law, not-for-profit law, there can be 2 ways the community has some level of control over a not-for-profit organization and over the board. One is with membership, and if there are members, then the members essentially have very, very strong level of control over what the board can do, and in fact gives the members effectively the ability to veto things like budgets. The other concept is designators, in which case the board designates specific people or specific legal people or entities to act on its behalf. And the powers are not as strong because the board still has the ultimate control, but you can give a fair amount of control. So you can't give a veto to designators, but you can give them some level of control. Currently, although we don't use the term, ICANN does use the designator model. Now, interestingly, designators, for instance, have the ability to appoint board members. The ALAC appoints a board member, or at large appoints a board member, as do the supporting organizations. Under California law, to do that, and to do that with the power of law behind you, in other words, you can sue if the board refuses to accept your new director, you have to be a legal entity, a corporation, an association, or as we're talking about right now, an unincorporated association. Currently, we are not within ICANN, and therefore, although we have the power to appoint board members, for instance, if the board were to simply say to us, no, we're not accepting your new board member, we couldn't do anything about it. Now, we're not expecting the board to do that, and we've never had that situation in the past, but it's an interesting thing that's been discovered in the legal analysis of where we are right now. So the decision of whether to be members or designators with designators is a lower level of power needs to be made. There have been a number of concerns raised with the concept of membership. One of them, and it's in my mind a critical one, is it has been suggested that many governments and government agencies, of which many CCTLDs are, could not join an association. And therefore, there's the question of, could the CCNSO or the GAC exist if they had to be formally unincorporated associations? And there's some question at this point about whether that's that is a problem or not. So that's one of the decisions. The weighting of the relative weighting of the groups is another decision, and the details on removal of board members is certainly something that's going to require input from the community. One of the problems with removal of the entire board is who runs the organization while you're going through the mechanism of reappointing a board, which in ICANN's normal context can take close to a year. So there's certainly a lot of questions. I'm going to turn it over to Cheryl now to talk about stress tests. I'd like to, for a moment though, try to define in simpler terms what a stress test is. A stress test is the identification of a bad thing happening or a potential bad thing happening, and then verifying if the new controls we put in fact, stop it from happening or not. And in as you'll see from Cheryl's talk, in most cases, we believe the account new controls and new accountability mechanisms we're putting in will fix the problem. In a few cases, it won't fix the problem, and it's not clear we can do anything about it and may have to live with it. You know, bankruptcy is an example of that. It's not clear we can stop it. But we've identified it, at least, and put our collective minds to looking at whether there's any way of fixing it. So I'll turn it over to Cheryl right now.
Thank you very much, Alan. Cheryl Langdon Orr for the record and for interpretation. I'm very mindful of time, but I would like, if possible, if we could just have the original presentation that Leon went through put back up on screen and take us to the graphic, which I think was on page 5, if not 6, because I just do want to speak to that very briefly. Being mindful of time, I'm not going to go through all 26 of the stress tests that you will find outlined in the document when it goes out for public comment. I do want to remind you all that those of you, actually, the next one is 6. No, I'm wrong. Must be 7. Obviously, I'm crazy. I'm just going to have to look until I find it. The issues that were put forward to our group as of potential concerns were, in fact, a larger number than what we're dealing with. What we did is look at all sorts of hypotheticals, and Alan, thank you for giving a nice generic description of what a stress test in our context happens to be. It is a way of running a hypothetical that you can, through an intellectual exercise, test and analyse whether or not a system or process or mechanism you have in place is in fact robust enough, or does it in fact expose some form of risk, liability, concern or issue. And if it does, then the stress testing itself does not come up with a solution to that. The solution to that is simply required by the fact that the stress testing has highlighted it or focused in on it. But in this graphic that is on the storyboard of the CCWG presentation, under Part 3, envisioning solutions, the solutions, mechanisms and community powers that we have for accountability are all going to be subject to stress testing. As Leon pointed out when he was looking at this slide, it is in fact highly recommended, if not required, of NTIA, at least for the IANA transition, for example, that the proposed IANA transition stewardship, transition of IANA stewardship, that those issues are stress tested. However, stress testing is something that some of you may be familiar with as being used in the financial industry. We are not doing exactly that sort of stress testing here. It is a more generic hypothetical exercise. And as such, of the number of hypotheticals that we looked at and were presented to us as being likely worthwhile tests under accountability for us to look at, we were able to group them into basically five general categories, and they're things such as a failure to meet certain accountability mechanisms, a situation where financial viability of ICANN is subject to concern. And all of that is outlined both in the wiki page for the Stress Test Working Party of Accountability, and if staff could find that link and put it into the chat, that would be great. If not, I have in fact presented it before, so a simple search on the wiki will find that for you. But also that we haven't closed off our books for people to, even after our next public comment period of this document on accountability has gone out, if you look at the 26 specific stress tests under the five different categories, and you think that there is a test that we have not considered that is germane to our work, then please feel free to let us know. But recognise that many individual tests are probably very closely, if not exactly, run through in a hypothetical sense under one of the scenarios, under one of the five categories. So we don't need to go too much into minutiae on these stress tests. They're generalised tools. However, we have found, even running through the stress tests as we have since we started this accountability work, as we've come up with mechanisms and community powers, we've run them against the current set of abilities and mechanisms that community have and accountability mechanisms that ICANN currently have attest to or in fact practice. And we have also got a set of and what we think the accountability cross community working group may or may not come up with. And that's been refined week on week, month on month. During that process, we have in fact had the opportunity, and this is what this diagram particularly refers to go back to the work parties that are involved in the specific mechanisms and say, as we've stress tested, as we run through a particular hypothetical now, we don't think that we can see a mechanism, a protection, a power, a whatever, that is in fact showing a high degree of accountability or a high degree of faith that this risk is going to be as small as is possible. And in that case, that work has gone back and has been put into the work plan for either this immediate published document now or later work stream to work in the future. So have a look at the stress tests in your own time. Get back to us during the public comment period. If you think we absolutely positively have missed something, we don't believe we have, by the way. But recognise that we're not trying to prevent things with stress testing. We're trying to analyse and focus on what may or may not be adequately addressed in terms of risks and likelihoods. And with that, I'll stop there. There will, of course, be a quite detailed and very fulsome explanation on stress testing, how we apply it, and indeed some opportunity for you to run through some of your own thoughts on some of the things that you might think might be a good stress test and a little exercise opportunity for you in the document that will be going out for public comment shortly. With that, I'll stop here and pass on to Avery. Over to you, Avery.
Thank you. Avery speaking. I will be very brief because, really. So I'll say very little about what I've been doing as a participant. The one thing I'll say is I'm one of those that has been arguing for things like giving parity to all advisory committees and not just a few of them. So that is the other side of the equation. But it is one of the two minority positions. So the minority positions are those of us that want to treat everybody equally and those that want to really treat people unequally. And then there's sort of the middle ground of just some people get treated unequally. But most of my focus has been on the ART and ART, ATRT, sorry, issued and getting the AOC commitments into the bylaws. Going forward, there's not going to be the same degree of, you know, NTIA pressure or perhaps the ability to give the guarantee of accountability that they attempted to give through the AOC reviews. So it's incumbent on us in this accountability process to make sure that those guarantees are indeed incorporated in the bylaws as obligations. Whether those bylaws end up as fundamental bylaws, that new class of bylaws that requires a higher threshold to change, or regular bylaws remains to be seen. One of the issues on that is one of the potentials that's been added is the ability to change the reviews over time as new reviews are needed and old reviews aren't. So in addition to putting in the need for doing the reviews in the bylaws, we are also putting in some of the, or at least one of the requirements that came out of the AATRT 2, the last accountability and transparency review team, is a yearly report, similar to what's done with a financial report, on the status of the work that came out of these reviews. So it would be status of accountability, status of transparency, but also status on all the work that's being done to meet the various recommendations that come out of the reviews. The other thing that there's been an attempt to do is to somehow strengthen the recommendations that come out, and this is still very much an open issue. These days, the recommendations are by and large accepted by the board, although in some cases, for example, the SSR and such, you know, there's divided opinions on how much of it was actually accepted by the board. But basically, to put an obligation on them to truly consider these things, to get comments, and perhaps a way of dealing with the redress if they do not accept the reviews, especially when reviews are going to be about 5 years apart. But there's an open discussion of to what extent should the board have to accept the recommendations and such, so that's ongoing. But that's been really one of my focuses as, you know, the ATRT rep, even though there are many other, not rep, but expert, even though there are many ATRT members from the past on the team who are also all experts at ATRT, though I do admit I have been reading and rereading the reports over the course of the period just to make sure I knew what I was talking about. But that's, with only 5 minutes left, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Avery. Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking. And that's an enormous amount of information we've had in the past hour. And the floor now is open for everyone on the call to be able to ask questions on any aspect of the proposal to any of our panelists. So I see first Tijani Benjamin in the queue. So Tijani, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. Tijani speaking. I have some remarks as a member of the CWG to communicate to the group. So first of all, as Alan said, to be member or designator, we have to become an incorporated association, and this will make us able to sue and to be sued. This is something for me a little bit critical, because if we are sued, yes, the advisor, the legal advisor, said that we can include in the bylaw an article saying that I can will bear any financial consequence of this. But suppose, what about the non-financial consequences? This is besides the fact that the CNSO and perhaps the GAC couldn't be this kind of association. Another point is about the composition of the community the community entity. As everyone said, as Alan said, and Avery said, there is more or less a preference for 5 times 5 plus 2 times 2, but I really support the fact that to have an equal power for each SO and ACs. And my problem is that, and for the public comment, perhaps we'll have only two proposals: 5 times 5 plus 2 times 2, or the SO is having 5 votes, 5 members, and the AC is having 2 members. I think this doesn't reflect the discussion inside the group, and at least we will have we need to have at least the third possibility, which is a flat power for everyone. Another point regarding the rejection of the budget. Rather than rejecting an approved budget and starting the year without a budget, there was a proposal inside the group that the power that will be given to the community will not shouldn't be given to reject the budget, but to control the budget, to approve the budget prior its adoption. We have now a system of consultation between the finance department and the community, and this is not binding for the board. The board wanted to do it, or the staff wanted to do it, and they do it. So if we make it binding, if we include it in the bylaws, it will be, for me, a better solution than giving the power of rejection of the budget, because this will give a situation not very comfortable for the organization. Regarding recalling the individual members of the board, at the beginning we decided inside the group that this will be in Workstream 2. And now it is in Workstream 1, and the reasons given wasn't convincing for me, but it is now. It is here now. And I think that this issue, I have two concerns for this issue. The first one is that the appointing SO and AC will be recalling their appointee. And this will make the board director trying to satisfy the constituency from which he is coming, more than trying to serve the organization as a whole, because he doesn't want to be recalled, since the organization that has appointed him has the power to recall him. This is the first point. The second point is that the NOMCOM, who is also appointing members, should be an unincorporated association to be able to recall people, to recall its appointees. And I don't see how it can be this kind of association, since it is not representing any kind of the community. It is not representing any interest of the community. So I don't see how it can be an association as the other SO and ACs. This is another problem for this issue. Last issue is about, Alan spoke about it, recalling the whole board, and he said how the organization will be run in absence of the board when it is recalled. I proposed from the beginning that when we appoint members to the board, we appoint a member and a substitute member. So the board will be composed of the members, but when we have the board recalled, the substitute member can sit on the board and continue the period of the re-election or reappointing of the new board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tijani. Olivier Capanablon speaking, and my goodness, that's quite a few points that you have made here. I wonder if any of our colleagues, Alan, Avery, Cheryl, Leon, do you have any response to any of the points that Tijani has made or adding to the points that Tijani has made on these? I see Alan Greenberg. Alan, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't take note of them, so I'm going to respond somewhat randomly. With regard to recalling directors being part of Workstream 2 versus Workstream 1, yes, we did make that decision. It happens to be one I didn't agree with at the time, but I think it's the sign of a dynamic and working organization that we can look at the decisions we made and say, yes, that wasn't quite right, let's rethink it. So I don't view that as negative at all. Certainly recalling the whole board is an ominous thing to do, and it's not clear we know how to do it properly, that is, how to make sure the organization keeps on running. The issue of directors having to just look at what their own organization wants, I don't think it's a particularly important one, and I'll give that for a number of reasons. First of all, I think any rational organization, and most of us, individuals may not be rational, organizations are more so in the ICANN context, is not going to withdraw a director that they selected randomly. And I think if a director appointed by at large or the GNSO or whatever is going to take action which quite clearly is not going to be appreciated by the organization that selected them, the onus is on that director to come talk and explain why. When we select a director, we don't select a director just to be our servant. We select an intelligent, thoughtful person who we think understands the issues relevant to our community. Now, that being said, I'm told that already, when you get near a renewal time, we have seen over the years directors abstaining from critical votes because they don't want to offend the community where they're trying to be reappointed. So it's already happening to some extent, but I don't think it happens to a large extent. And I think the directors we pick in general are mature enough to know that, yes, they may not get reappointed if their views have diverged significantly from their appointing organization, and that's life. So I really don't think it's a major issue. I think it's more important to have the ability of recognizing that you did make a mistake in an appointment and fixing it. So that's addressing some of the issues. I think I'll stop talking.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And Tijani, your hand is still up. Is this a new hand?
It's an old hand. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. So any more questions from anybody on this on the topic? I had a question which I think Tijani touched on, the issue of flat voting. I wonder if we can turn to the slide that looks at the community powers, because I think that's probably one of the key set of work that the working group has worked on. Gisela, do we have a chance to move to the community power slide, please?
With the five columns. Colored.
There
Very good. The magic is happening. And, of course, the Tijani mentioned flat voting, and I'm not sure I quite understood, and thank you for this, I quite understood what was at the bottom of that first page. Relative voting power. Oh, somebody is moving things back and forth at the moment.
It's there. Don't touch.
Okay. I'll take the sink off, and then everyone can move to the to this part. Why is this moving like this?
if a presenter moves, it moves.
I don't know what presenter is moving, or maybe two of them are trying to center it on their screen.
I will move it to the right place. Don't anyone touch it.
Okay, so we're not touching it. It's in the right place at the moment for me. So, Alan, I'm looking at the numbers here and seeing CCNSO, GNSO, ASO, at-large GAC 5, SSAC, RSSAC 2. Does that mean that each one has one vote there? Is that the flat voting, or is that a different?
No. I think flat voting that Tijani was talking about, I'll let him correct me if I'm wrong, meant every group has the same number of votes.
Exactly.
Which is not either of the options that are there.
Ah, okay. So here, what it actually says, and it's Olivia speaking, it says that the CCNSO would have 5 votes, GNSO 5 votes, ESO 5 votes, at-large 5 votes, GAC 5 votes, and then there would be 2 votes for SSAC and 2 votes for RSSAC, or is the other system that's there?
The first one, the one you just described, is what they are calling the reference model. It is the preferred option by the people who have participated in the discussion so far.
Right, okay.
The other one, it was preferred by a very small number of people. I'm not quite sure why it's still on the table, but it is. And there's a third one, which, as a number of people have suggested, that everyone gets the same number of weighted vote. And that one, although it's been supported by probably a larger number of people than number two, is not listed. We can ask a co-chair why that's the case, but so be it.
By the way,
one additional note. At one point, there was the feeling that if the ALAC, for instance, has 5 votes, that they must all be cast uniformly. The current position is they could be divided if that was appropriate on any given decision. And the intent is to set the thresholds so that a single organization cannot veto. So, for instance, if in the first scenario there are 29 votes, the threshold could not be set at 25 required to do something, because that means the 5 votes from any specific organization could veto a decision. It would have to be set at a lower number to be possible. The other thing that is still up for grabs, up for discussion, is how do we handle abstentions. If you treat abstentions as a no, then we may find that no decision can ever be made because the GAC always abstains. So we're still talking about that. Abstentions probably will not count as no's, but then you have an issue that if enough people abstain, a decision could be made by a very small community, which we wouldn't want either. So there's still many questions to be resolved, many details.
Thanks for this, Alan. Olivier Capablanc speaking. And the next question is also related to the different processes that we have here. There are 5 processes in front of our eyes. They appear to have different timescales, though, to be affected. Is that being looked at by the working group as well? Because Tijani mentioned earlier, recalling the budget or rejecting the budget means then that ICANN would need to run without an approved budget, or risks running without an approved budget. Certainly that's a very time-sensitive process at that point. And that's just an example. Alan Greenberg, still your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. On that issue, if you recall, about 2 years ago, ICANN didn't approve its budget, which starts July 1st, until somewhere around the end of July. And the way it was handled is we kept on running at the previous year's budget prorated for the next year. So that means new initiatives cannot be funded. It means increases you were hoping to have don't come into effect, but the basic budget keeps on working. That could be particularly onerous, however, if we were looking at a situation where the revenue had gone down significantly and last year's budget is far too lavish. But nevertheless, it does allow money to keep on being spent and checks to be written. And presumably, if we had a situation where it could be delayed not by the board as it was a few years ago, but by the community, that there would be similar provisions. So the organization would have to keep on running. IANA in particular would have to have reserve funds so that under no conditions could IANA stop running. So there's a number, again, a number of details, but we don't suddenly run out of money. It's not like the U.S. government, which can't spend any money anymore. We would have to make sure that we have a provision to go forward.
Thank you, Alan. Tejani Benjamin is next.
Thank you, Olivier. Yes, Alan, you're right. We will not be out of money during the beginning of the fiscal year if the budget is not approved. But I think it is not a comfortable situation for the organization, as you said, for some situations. And the best is not to have the power to reject the budget, is to have the power to approve the budget. The budget cannot be adopted by the board if it is not approved by the community and approved step by step as it is done now. And I think it is a very safe way because we will not have any delay. We will have the budget on time approved by the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Tejani. Olivier Capanablon speaking. Are there any other questions or comments on the presentation today or on indeed any aspects of the working group's work? I turn to, I see Leon Sanchez has put his hand up. So, Leon, you have the floor.
Thank you very much for this, Olivier. I just have to make a quick follow-up on the budget approval. We are still looking into whether this process would be something carried out by the community. I mean, the budget should be submitted for community covenant approval before it goes through board approval, or the other way around, which would be, I think, a little bit more problematic, and which the board approves the budget, and then we have the community commenting and, of course, going through approval of this budget. So we still don't have a final formula for this, but certainly both options, either having the budget approved by the community first and then by the board or the other way around, those are two options that are on the table at the moment. Thank you.
Thanks very much for this, Leon. Olivier, Panablon speaking. And I was going to ask our panelists and indeed anyone else on the call, I note that we have a few members of the working group on the call, if there are any aspects of the proposal or of the work so far that hasn't been covered in this webinar so far. I see Sébastien Bacholet. Sébastien, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to go back to an item that was of much importance to me, and that's about the number of at-large members that would be included in the description. So I think there should be some specialist members designated. And I think we have members at at-large that could perfectly fill that position. I'm very surprised see that you propose to have a structure that is the same that has been defined in the past. And so whether there will be five or two representatives of ALAC, is going to make a difference as to our influence in the board. So I think we should all know what the other is doing. The right hand has to be aware of what the left hand is doing. And there are two very important aspects to this. And so I think what's important here is the selection of the people who are going to be assuring these positions. We should consider gender issues, for instance, and regions, because I have a feeling that this structure that you intend to implement is going to perhaps limit sometimes our power. And yet, the intergovernmental structure has a situation which is different as ever, isn't it? So we shouldn't complicate the matter further with these new ideas of what they could potentially achieve and what we could never get to. So that's all I had to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for this, Sebastian. Let's have Alan Greenberg as the response.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure I fully understood Sebastian's comments. I think at the beginning he said he's surprised that we're willing to accept that the ALAC gets two and other organizations get five. I may have misunderstood him, but if that is what he said, then I think I've made it clear that I do not believe the ALEC would accept that, that I believe as a chartering organization we would refuse that ultimately. So I don't think that is an issue. The issue of regional balance, we have tried to make sure that the number originally proposed was four, and we have upped the number to five, largely based on the regional needs of the ALAC and perhaps the CCNSO as well, or the GAC, but I'm the one who pushed for that. And in terms of gender balance and things like that, we're at a continual set of odds on picking people for any given community. If we insist that each organization picks their own people and no one's trying to balance things, then we're at a much worse situation with regard to balancing regions, for those who don't pick by region, and balancing things like gender or other things. We can't have it both ways. We can encourage people to honor balance, but if we give them absolute control, as has generally been the wish of the community, then balance is one of those things that may get left out. It's a choice we have to make. Thank you.
Thanks very much for this, Alan. Olivier Crépin Leblanc speaking. We still have about 10 minutes in this webinar, so the floor is still open for questions on any aspect of this report. And perhaps one of the things, if we do have the time, was a repeat of what were the specific points, perhaps, since we have now a common period coming up in a few weeks' time, what are the specific points that would touch at large internet end users in this proposal? Now, a proper answer is not everything. Obviously, there might be some points which are more important than others, but what specific points should we look out for in formulating or perhaps in pitching our community And I'm asking here of community members who are on the line, that would be of particular importance to them. What does this mean to the person in the street? Alan Greenberg.
I think the things that are important to us right now is that we make sure that we have a voice that will be listened to. We're not going to win every argument if we're differing from other people, but we want to make sure we have be able to participate fairly in any process going forward. I think that's the key thing. Our views may be identical to those of another group, so it's not necessarily users, but should they differ, we need to be able to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Olivier speaking. I was going to ask perhaps in any of the envisaged scenarios whether that would actually affect the public interest or affect end users in a negative way. Thinking, for example, about the proposal of ICANN to turn into a membership organization. What would that mean? If anything, it might be that it doesn't mean anything at all, since the way that it could be built would not affect end users at the end of the day. Just one of the example questions that I felt asking. I don't see anyone rush to put their hand up on this, so... Then I'll turn over to Leon to let us and remind us, actually. I see Sebastian first. So let's have Sebastian, and then just in closing afterwards, we'll have Leon reminding us of the deadlines that we have coming up and for us to be prepared with our fingers on the buzzer. Sebastian Bachelet, you have the floor.
Thank you. This is Sebastian Bachelet speaking. So, I would like to know the status of the current situation of the work that's been done for the implementation of certain recommendations and to see what the ICANN structure is to be, what your resolution was. So there might be an ICANN 4.0 as a new version, but I don't think that has been established yet. The structure hasn't been decided. And that should be communicated to the community in general as soon as it is. So I think this would allow us to be in a better position for the IANA stewardship and the transition of this role. And we might, in general terms, have to act towards this sense. I'm sorry, but his sound was a bit choppy.
Okay, thanks very much for this. Yeah, thank you. I see Tijani Benjama has put his hand up, perhaps with a response or a reaction to Sebastian's points. Tijani, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Olivier. It is not a response to Sebastian. It's only to say I wanted to inform the group that we worked very good till Istanbul. We took pace, a normal pace, but from Istanbul the pace raised very fast, and it has begun more or less impossible for a lot of the group members to follow and to contribute. And this is for me a handicap for the group. The text prepared now doesn't reflect the point of view of the whole group, because some didn't follow, some didn't participate. And and I don't find that there is a reason for that, because I repeat, we don't have a deadline. They say because of the CWG, they need our input. No, we need their model so that we define the accountability mechanisms adequate for their model. It is not the other way, and we have to provide the accountability mechanisms before the transition, and we can do it with a normal pace without speeding like this. So it is a problem. I tried to catch up. I had a problem at a certain moment, but I tried to catch up. But it would be very much better if we didn't speed in this way, so that the result will be better. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Tijani, and for these points. I know some reaction in the chat and to the points that you've made. Certainly concerned, but or rather disturbing that the report didn't reflect the view of the whole group. And that, I guess, might just be a temporary thing, depending on how the progress is taking place. I know it's Avery Doria has put her hand up. Avery, you have the floor.
Thank you. This is Avery. I guess I want to take exception with the comment that the report does not take into account the entire group, or at least the way I think it's being understood. I think that the report does take in the entire group that has been participating. I think what Tijani said is that there are those with different opinions that may not have participated or may only be starting to participate now, and that catching up is very difficult. And so I think there's an obligation on the group to help get people up to speed, to understand what's been done, and to understand those places, if there are any, where, you know, the views of a significant proportion of people haven't been taken into account. So while it's still getting, and also on the CWG model, on the transition model, at the moment that is now on the table. You know, it's a new model, it's a compromise model. I know it's not the purpose of this webinar to discuss it, but it is now on the table. And there has been a constant communication between the two groups on the cross dependencies that the CWG had on the CCWG. But I think it would be unfortunate to hold up Workstream 1. And one of the things I think happens in the group is people try to put too many of their aspirations for what is called the Tesla of ICANNs into Workstream 1 as opposed to the longer effort Workstream 2. Thanks.
Thank you very much for this, Avery. Olivier Crépin-Ablon speaking. Alan Greenberg is next.
Thank you, and I'm conscious we only have 1 minute left. Tijani is partly right, because I'm one of those people who have gotten lost. That the people who are working on each individual section have been very diligent, but not necessarily are. It's not clear the rest of the group is up to speed on some of these things. So there are things in the report that some of us have not consciously signed off of. That is correct. But at this point, I think we've done enough work that we need to vet what we've done with the community. And as Leon pointed out, there may be one more draft coming out. There may be two more drafts coming out, depending on how things go. So, it's time to get a larger body of people involved, and I think it's time for all of us, including those members on the group who have focused on specific areas but not others, to read through the whole thing and say, what are the issues that are still current, that are still important. We've identified a number of things that certainly surprised me. We talked about the CCNSO perhaps not being able to be an unincorporated association. We also found out that under our current model, they should have been to enable them to really have the powers that they're granted now, even though they're not enforceable. So we have some interesting situations that we're going to have to resolve. It's not clear how we go forward, but it's time, I think it's a reasonable time to do a checkpoint.
Thank you very much, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Ablon speaking, and we have started this webinar 5 minutes late, so we have another thanks to our interpreters, another 5 minutes to close this call in a neat way. I was going to call upon Leon to remind us then what are the next steps, not for the working group only, but the next steps with regards to public comment period and what's coming up for us to be ready for. Leon, are you still here?
I am, Olivier.
Fantastic. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. Well, just as a reminder, we will be releasing the draft document for public comment on May the 4th, if everything goes well. So the public comment period will run from May the 4th to June the 3rd. This will be, of course, the opportunity that not only the at-large community, but the wider ICANN and internet community will have to comment on the draft proposal that will be submitted for this end. And after that, we will be reviewing the different input received by the community and try to incorporate it into a second draft proposal, which will be, of course, worked on in Buenos Aires at our face-to-face meeting. And after we do this, we will, of course, review the document and evaluate the need for a second public comment period, or if it's already everything in place, we will be submitting this proposal to the chartering organizations for approval, and if they do approve, then that proposal would be handed to the board for submission to the NTIA. So at this time, we don't have a fixed timeline because we, of course, are dependent on whether we will be running a second public comment period or not. But the general timeline is, as I just described, we would be looking at having a final proposal for approval of the board by our meeting in Dublin. So you can see that we are 6 months away from having this last proposal submitted to the board and approved by it, so it can then be submitted to the NTIA. So that would be, of course, the final, the large overview of our timeline at this stage. And we welcome any thoughts or comments on this first draft proposal and encourage everyone to comment. And I think one very important part is the one that Cheryl raised with regards to stress tests. And if you do have or you come to some situation which hasn't been already compressed, the stress test exercise, well, we encourage you to come forward and make your contribution with regards to the stress test. I see Rinavia is asking about a brief to the board from the CWG. We are working on this. We are, as you know, Bruce Duncan is the board's liaison to the CWG. We are working with Bruce to find a slot which suits both the board and the coaches of the CCWG, so the coaches can brief the board. I believe this will be happening in May. I don't know the exact date at this moment, but we are working with Bruce to arrange this briefing. This will happen before Buenos Aires, of course, as it is desirable that the board has a heads up on what we're doing before we get to our meeting in Buenos Aires. And I see Cheryl is signaling that, of course, any stress test contributions should be added and are welcome to be added to the wiki page. And there is, of course, no need to include in the public comment replies, but feel free to add them to the wiki page. So with this, I turn back to Olivier, and if there are any other questions, I'm very happy to address them at this point.
Thanks very much, Leon. Over to Cheryl. Yes, I heard you.
Thank
Cheryl,
you. I just thank you, Cheryl Langdon. Off the record, I specifically was suggesting that there wasn't any particular need to put stress test proposal scenarios into your public comments, because the stress tests really run once all of the mechanisms and community empowerment are settled. The PCs are a way of getting to that end game. However, the stress tests are outlined in the public comment document, but please feel free to put comments about other ones you think might be relevant into the wiki page. We will take those under consideration in exactly the same way as we would anything that comes in through the PC, but if it comes in through the PC, it will only be dealt with in the fullness of all comments from all things on all questions. And I would suggest the fastest and most effective way to have input on the stress test is to do it via the wiki page. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for this. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And as far as at large is concerned, the next steps are to have a response or to build a response to this public comment, which I believe Leon mentioned was starts on the 1st of May, which is only 48 hours away. So maybe it would be time to create a wiki page in our policy commenting policy development page system. May the 4th, it gives us a few more days, but create that space already so that it's ready for it to be actioned. I think it is a very short public comment period as well, again, so we will need every single day of that to be able to proceed with having some kind of an answer. And, of course, on that page, it would be helpful to have a link to the present webinar's recording, so that we can refer back to it. And with this, I'd like to thank everyone on the call, but in particular, I'd like to thank the interpreters, Sabrina on the Spanish channel, and Claire and Camilla on the French channel, and also to Gisela, who has been doing wonders yet again with preparation of this webinar. So thanks to Gisela in particular, and thanks to all of you for being on this excellent webinar. This call is now adjourned. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.